This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Hello, I'm Philip Nice, and welcome to Trumpet Hour. Today is Friday, May 24th, the day my daughter turns 9, in fact, in a tumultuous world. I'm looking at the dashboard of thetrumpet.com, the content management system, and all the articles that are scheduled for posting. In addition to everything that you can see right now, we have a number of articles upcoming that just show how tumultuous this world is, in fact, getting. I'm looking at Russia removes navigation buoys on river bordering Estonia. I'm looking at our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury's article, Who Will Control the Middle East, which has posted at this point. I'm looking at China surrounds Taiwan. Taiwan deploys defense. I'm looking at Russia launches counter-space weapon into same orbit as U.S. satellite. Anti-Semitism in Berlin hits an all-time high. It's a very tumultuous world. We bring you that. We focus in on that each week. But children are growing up in a different kind of world than what most of us assumed they would grow up in. Our Philadelphia Trumpet staff writers and contributors and editors are standing by to fill you in on the most significant and most recent developments and to present for your consideration connections to certain statements by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury and certain sections of the Holy Bible. Trumpet Hour's purpose, of course, being to connect current world events to Bible prophecy. But that's an effort we don't take lightly. It's not something that's easily accomplished, but we do present that to you for your evaluation. And if, in fact, these events are connected to Bible prophecy, that does put quite a burden of decision on you, the listener. So we're thinking of you. We're thinking of just what it means to connect events that seem not at all related to the Bible, which was concluded about 2,000 years ago. But if the Bible finished 2,000 years ago, does accurately portray the current events in the 21st century in China, in Europe, in the United States, then there is definitely something to the Bible. You have definitely not been getting that at church on Sunday morning, and you have a choice to make. So we're going to present these things to you. We're going to connect them to statements by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury as he has explained these prophecies, and then it'll be up to you. But we have Richard Palmer joining us from Edstone, England, or rather I'm joining him, I guess I should say.
Yeah, everyone's traveling all over the place at the moment at the start of the summer. But right, yeah, I guess we're hosting the recording.
Yeah, it's amazing what technology can and cannot do. We've had some struggles getting connected here, but I think we're all set. We have Andrew Miller here in the studio. We have Rufaro Mwanyepa joining us from Zimbabwe. Hello, Rufaro.
Hello.
He's a contributor to The Trumpet, and he's taking the place of Mihailo Zekic covering the Middle East. But Mr. Palmer, let's start with you. Let's start with Europe. Actually, before we start with Europe, I wanted to ask you about the interview that you did recently. Tell us a little bit about that interview, where people can find it, and whether it was any good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't have a huge amount of experience interviewing. I've probably been interviewed quite a bit more. So it was a fun experience being on the other side of the table. Yeah, it was. We got an email kind of out of the blue from Jim Ferguson, who's an individual who, he's been involved in British politics. He's now kind of running a bit of a news organization. And he got in touch with us because he said, look, I've been a Trumpet subscriber for a long time, and I believe you need the Bible to understand the news. And I'm running this news organization, and I think my readers and my listeners need some biblical perspective to get a full understanding of what's happening in the world. Can you help me give it to them? That's a question we love to be asked. So One of the things we set up after that discussion was this interview. It took a bit of time of back and forth to fit in our schedule and all of that. And we got it all slotted in. And then the night before, you know, I was telling him I had all my questions kind of figured out or whatever. And then the night before, the British Prime Minister gets out there, stands out in the pouring rain and announces we're going to have elections, which was very surprising. But it was fantastic timing for us. We had this interview all lined up. I dropped Mr. Stephen Fleury, the host of Trumpet, the Trumpet Daily Show, an email and said, hey, we've got this interview lined up with a guy that's been pretty involved in British politics. He stood as a Conservative candidate before. He was pretty involved in setting up the Brexit Party. You know, he now does a lot of political watching. We've got this interview set up. If you like, we can send you a segment on the election. And he wrote back and said, well, why don't you just take the whole show? And I'm really glad he did because, you know, I think we did the interview. We weren't quite sure in advance how we were going to use it. And then when we got done, you know, George and I, who's our producer for the Trumpet Daily over here in the UK, we just kind of looked at each other like, that's the show. We don't really need to add anything to it, or it's the perfect length. I think we covered quite a wide range of material. I really enjoyed some of the things he had to say about Barack Obama and some of his kind of influence in this radical left movement around the world. My favorite section was the end, where we talked a bit about his history with reading The Trumpet, and he was talking about his experience of watching the prophecies and the forecasts of Herbert W. Armstrong, watching those happening. So you're here, you don't even need to take our word for it. You've got kind of a news watcher out there who's got his own organization and he's doing his own thing, but he perfectly capable of saying, yeah, I used to read this from Mr. Armstrong and I see it, it's happening. And so it was great to hear that from him as well. So I found it a very fun hour or so. And so you can go to, if you look at the Trumpet Daily section of our website, it's probably the easiest way to find that. That's towards the bottom right on the homepage there. And you can go and please do listen to that interview. And hopefully we'll have a few more things like that coming up. It was, I think it went really well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Not only the world events and his perspective and his respect for Mr. Armstrong's forecasts, but his own experience as a trumpet reader. That's called Interview with Jim Ferguson, The Dangers of the Globalist Movement. Interview with Jim Ferguson, The Dangers of the Globalist Movement. As Mr. Palmer said there, that's right there on the homepage on thetrumpet.com. And it's the May 23rd episode of The Trumpet Daily. So go ahead, Mr. Palmer, if you would, and give us that traditional rundown of top stories from Europe.
Well, a lot of them revolve around Russia kind of poking Europe and Europe responding to that. There's almost every day this week we've had articles on this trend. Russia began the week by announcing quietly that they were shifting their naval boundary unilaterally with Finland and Lithuania, something they had not discussed with either. You know, these countries found out from the news media with everyone else that Russia was apparently talking about changing the borders. Then Russia's state news kind of rode this back. But still, of course, that's, you know, to wake up and find your neighbor saying, hey, we're grabbing your territory, and then there being even a bit of confusion about that, that's definitely not a comforting situation to be in. Later in the week, Estonia then was saying that the Russian forces were going along and moving navigational buoys on the river, or navigational buoys for our American audience. They weren't kidnapping Estonian children, but they were moving these navigational buoys on the river border between the two. Again, a pretty provocative move. On Tuesday, Russia practiced using smaller tactical nuclear weapons. On Wednesday, France test launched a nuclear capable missile and simulated a nuclear strike. Of course, as all of these things are, these were long planned and completely coincidental. And everyone knows that that's not true, but that's the kind of narrative there. So a lot of, and there's a lot of things to make Europe nervous. And we're seeing real changes. We're seeing more and more speeches from the German chancellor. We're seeing stronger and stronger rumors that Germany is on the brink of reintroducing conscription so that it can rapidly expand its military. And all these articles about, well, how does Europe deal with these nuclear threats, this nuclear posturing? Do we need some kind of European nuclear force? So definitely a very important trend that we've been watching all year, but it was a big week for that trend over the last week.
This is wild. There, almost in passing, you heard Richard Palmer say, on Tuesday, Russia practiced using smaller tactical nuclear weapons. Right? I mean, just an indication of how wild, how gyrating the world is when this is just one of the stories to take note of this week. Also, the fact that Russia's Navy is carrying out exercises in the Atlantic.
Oh, yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah.
Russian too many provocations to remember.
And this is all just Russia, right? And then Russia, you mentioned President Putin purging top-level military officials, perhaps to create a more deadly Russian army, as if it's not deadly enough to both its enemies and itself. What's the
That's just, I think that could be a very important story to watch on this purging of the Russian officials. I think it seems pretty clear by now that the corruption has been a major problem for the military, that a lot of their effectiveness has been hurt by corrupt officials, and they're getting fired. But then also, we saw this process in China maybe about 5 years ago or so, where, again, I think corruption was a genuine problem, and a lot of that was genuinely rooted out. But it was also absolutely instrumental in Xi Jinping really cementing his control as basically emperor for life over the Chinese Communist Party and all of that. And I think you could easily see the same dynamic going on now in Russia. I think Vladimir Putin already has a lot more control than, say, Xi Jinping did prior to the Chinese anti-corruption drive. But this is going to reduce, say, some of the factionalism within the Russian government and probably bring things under more direct control, which is, this is one of the things we've been saying right from the start of the Ukraine war, that you're going to see this. I think Jeremiah Jacques, who he's not here today, he had a great article right at the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, where he talked about Russia's war on Russia and how this is going to lead to Russia being more brutal against its own people. And I think this anti-corruption drive, say, and more being centered under Vladimir Putin, that's probably going to be a step closer towards this kind of Soviet-style system of unaccountable secret police and people being purged and sent off and being disappeared. So it's another part of Russia being transformed too. So Russia is transforming, and then that transformation is in turn transforming Europe.
Exactly.
But I think you were asking about the main story today, which I think the biggest story that we'll have to talk about sticks in my home country of the United Kingdom. We alluded this to already, where Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister, came out and announced that we will be holding elections. Those elections are going to be held on July 4th. So it should be very easy for our American readers to remember that date. I've already got some time off booked for the first week of July. So I think it was the Brexit referendum, or there was some kind of news event. I was trying to cover that from inside a tent in Land's End or the Lizard, the furthest south peninsula in Cornwall. I may well be, I'm not camping this time, but may well be in a similar kind of situation here with the vote there. But it caught everyone by surprise. He doesn't have to hold it this soon. It's got to be this year. I think this is way more enjoyable than when you know the exact date years and years in advance, where it's like, okay, at some point in the next 5 years, there's got to be a vote, but the government gets to call it when. I mean, that gets to pick when to call it. That keeps you on your toes a lot more. And it kind of gets rid of as well this very predictable, almost permanent election cycle that America seems to continually have, where it always feels like it's on the brink of a big election. But he could have waited, which he's doing disastrously in the polls. The question, the people aren't talking about who's going to win. They're talking about, are the Conservative Party going to survive as a political party? So why hold it now? Why not wait? Like, if you're going to be executed tomorrow or in a month's time,
right,
you pick the month's time, because a month's a long time. Something might turn up. So the fact that he decided to go now caught a lot of people by surprise. And we did have some good economic news recently. Inflation is down to a more sane level. The economy kind of turned a corner and started growing, albeit slightly. So maybe that's a consideration. They kind of figure, well, this is the best news we're going to get. It's got a lot of people worried, like, what news coming between now and November do they know about that we don't, that has caused them to go early? Is Rishi Sunak just fed up with the job? And it is fascinating to me right now. We have a mass exodus of British leadership. There's a whole bunch of Conservative MPs that are quitting the politics. They're not going to stand in the election. They believe that they're going to lose. They don't want to lose. There's talk about Conservative MPs being very annoyed with Rishi Sunak for causing this early, because he's robbed them 6 months of job hunting. You know, if it's November, they've got a lot longer to line up their next career move than now they have to with July. Is Rishi Sunak himself just done? That's it. He feels like, well, I'm going to lose, and I don't want to sit around here as an unpopular prime minister for six more months. Let's just get this over with. I mean, that might be the most plausible reason for calling it now.
So, I mean, one way of looking at this is politics as usual. Things happen, parties lose popularity and then surge again. I remember when Jeremy Corbyn was kind of at near the top of the heap. Now, I don't know what's become of him, or maybe he's resurging. So point being that politics ebb and flow. Is this more than an ebb and flow?
I think there's more to this than an ebb and flow, yes. I think you're seeing the same kind of thing that you're seeing in the United States, this kind of rhino uniparty type trend where the reason, I think it's really interesting, you look at the polls and you look at how like Labour's won these elections by a landslide, some of the local elections we've had recently. But you dig into the details and they actually had a slightly smaller percentage of the vote than they did in previous times. It's just that the vote for the Conservative Party have collapsed. And I think I remember vaguely someone saying this about the US, and I think it very accurately describes Britain right now, where the Labour Party are going to take you to the left very quickly. The Conservative Party are going to take you in exactly the same direction, but a bit slower.
Right.
If you like that direction, you're going to vote Labour. If you don't like that direction, okay, well, maybe you vote for the Conservatives so that you slow down the arrival at that destination. But fundamentally, for a huge chunk of the population, they have no one to vote for. No one matches their beliefs, their values. I mean, that's more than politics as usual, I think. And that's something the entire West, that's America, that's Britain, that's Europe, where you have a left wing that has maintained a kind of a grip on the media, on the mainstream political parties on the right and the left, and they have a very narrow view as to what is acceptable. And they're very quick to deem anything outside of that view as racist, Nazi, anti, you know, whatever. And that is where we get to this trend that we talk about a lot in Europe, where there's a growing body of people that say, no, we don't like this narrow view. But it's so rigid, the only way to break out of that is to break the system. And in Europe, you're talking about a continent that doesn't have centuries of history with democracy. You break the system, you might not get democracy back. And we know from the Bible that you won't. So I think you're seeing them go in that direction in Europe. And it's kind of a similar trend in the United States, and in Britain, it's playing out a bit differently. But it shows, you know, we don't have... I mean, where's the leadership? Where's the men of courage? This is Isaiah 3 is a scripture that we come to describing the social and political scene within Britain and America. And again, this is this point that you, Philip, make so often and powerfully about the society watch leads the world watch. And we can sit here and I can be very frustrated about Britain's relationship with the European Union or how Britain and America deal with Iran. And Isaiah 3 is kind of pivotal for connecting the dots between the society watch and the world watch, that the decisions that we're making about our families and our child rearing and, you know, bringing in woke nonsense, but even things kind of that are much less extreme, say, than transgenderism, but just upside down families, divorce, schools raising children instead of parents raising children. One of the things that leads to is a lack of leadership. And that's what we have in Britain, where, I mean, nobody is enthusiastic about anybody. I think Sir Keir Starmer, it does look like he's a shoo-in to win the election. Most people don't think he'll make a very good prime minister. Like, you can't find anyone that's enthusiastic about leadership. And Isaiah 3 talks about, well, God takes away the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prudent, the ancient, the honorable man, the counselor, the eloquent orator, you know, all of these things that we look for politicians to fulfill. And then even there's a section in there that is kind of, it's almost unbelievable, but I think we're seeing it where we're used to politicians that will do anything and say anything to get to the top. And then Isaiah 3 kind of talks about the situation where it gets so bad that no one really wants the top job, where it says a man shall take a hold of the brother of his house and of his father, saying, you have clothing, be you ruler, and let this ruin be under your hand. In that day, he shall swear, saying, I will not be a healer, for in my house, neither bread nor clothing, nor make me a ruler of the people. You know, you govern this mess. No, I don't want to. I mean, that is kind of what we're seeing in Britain right now, with Rishi Sunak, I think, just trying to get out of there, Conservatives all trying to jump out of the sinking ship. No one sees how to solve the problems, and so they just don't want to be in charge anymore. And that's why this message is so important, and so because this is the solution. Like, we're putting a message out about, like, you fix families, you get back to the Bible, you do the law of God, and that is a practical solution. And you know, these leaders, they're not turning to the Bible, but they are seeing, well, they're out of solutions. They don't have the way to solve it. And our message is, no, the only way to fix that is to get back to what God has revealed to mankind in his word.
Right. Fix the foundation, right? We do all these things. We have all these solutions. Even the churches, they're not getting back to fixing the foundation. I was talking with Andrew Miller yesterday, I think it was. He's here in the studio with us. And I said, I think people are tired of conservatives complaining. It seems like there's conservatives, whether they're in Britain or in America, who know how to complain, who know how to seem like they're attack dogs and criticize the many things that can be criticized about the radical perversions and so forth of the radicals. But people are getting burned out and tired of them complaining. It's almost like there's this little business model where if you complain enough, but not too much, and certainly don't change anything, then you can be a successful conservative politician. And you can skim off enough votes to become a conservative politician. But in America, as more and more people are recognizing this uniparty reality, and in Britain as well, you're not going to have a movement. You're not going to have energy or enthusiasm for people who, as you say, are taking you in the exact same direction, just more slowly. And then, as you said there, I mean, some people don't follow world events. Some people don't connect them to prophecy. But many people, even who do, do not connect prophecy, these fascinating prophecies about world empires and so forth, to the foundation, to the families. And that's the, as far as I understand it, at least, that's the entire point. You have prophecy in the Bible, right? It does prove the existence of God in a powerful way. And for many people, we need to start there. So I should say that. But one of the main reasons is to change our behavior in our homes, in our marriages, because what we're seeing is a structure, a faulty structure built on a bad foundation. You mentioned Isaiah 3, which I just go read Isaiah 3. It doesn't take long, just the beginning of that chapter. Do you have any thoughts on an article or book that the listener might appreciate on this angle?
Well, I had an article in the January 2023 Trumpet Print called What Happened to British Leadership that does kind of try to connect the dots between Isaiah 3 and what we see. That and also the book of Hosea is a very important book for understanding the problems of Britain and America. One of the statements there, it says, "Oh Israel, you have destroyed yourself." You know, we are being punished. We are being cursed. We talked about that on this show. But in a lot of ways, we have destroyed ourselves. So much of Bible prophecy, like you were saying, it gets back to cause and effect. And you do this cause, this is the outcome. And that's kind of, if there was no relationship between cause and effect, you couldn't have prophecy, because something would happen and you'd roll a dice and you know, something different. Like, so it is absolutely founded on this cause and effect. And so that goes and shows. We can sit here and complain about the lack of leadership. And in some ways, we're like the conservatives. We're causing the problems and we just keep doing the things that cause the problems. And then we complain about the effects of those problems.
Right. Go back and look at Isaiah. Go back and look at Hosea, which, as I understand it, lived around the same time, the 700s BC. And ask yourself, were their words recorded just for whatever was happening in 700s BC? And for some random reason, they have been preserved for thousands of years so that we can still read them today? Or were they recorded so that they could be preserved, so that we could read them today? There's many other things that were written in 700s BC and about the events then, and they were not recorded and miraculously preserved to today. So is there a reason why you can go and read Isaiah today? You can read Hosea today. And do they apply to British leadership? Do they apply to American leadership? Do they apply to your family leadership, your marriage leadership? That's something, again, that you're going to have to prove for yourself. But you could start with the Bible itself, Isaiah 3, the book of Hosea, and then have a look at what happened to British leadership. That's what happened to British leadership in the January 2023 edition of the Philadelphia Trumpet. So we've talked about Europe. We've talked also a little bit about Asia. We'll talk more about that with Andrew Miller. But first, we have Rufaro Manyepa. Rufaro, you're covering the Middle East again for us, pinch hitting, as we say, in the United States when we are baseball fans, which we are. Thanks for covering for Mihailo for the Middle East. What have been the top stories that you and maybe he have been looking at this week?
Yeah, he helped me out a little bit and kind of pointed me in the right direction. There's been a lot going on in the Middle East this week. It started off with Iran's president and foreign minister dying in a helicopter crash at the start of the week. They just visited Azerbaijan and the helicopter that was carrying them crashed in the mountains in eastern Iran. It's highly mountainous, heavy fog over there, and so they crashed. And there was a little bit of noise about it at the start, but everybody just recognizes how obsolete a lot of the machinery that they have in Iran is, and that's the main cause. But it isn't every day that a president and a foreign minister die in a crash. So it was pretty significant. People were asking, what's happening, what comes next. But despite his title as president, he didn't set a lot of the policy in Iran. Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, he's still in charge. So as long as that's the case, and even if it isn't, we can expect Iran's reign of terror to continue. Everything we've been saying still applies. That isn't likely to change anytime soon. Another story is Ireland, Spain, and Norway. They came out this week and they announced that they would formally recognize a Palestinian state. Several other countries have done this before. Slovenia, Malta, Belgium, they've said that they might do the same as well. They think that a two-state solution is the only solution. They're following the lead of the English-speaking nations, turning their backs on Israel. And one final one, this happened today. The International Court of Justice, it announced a couple of hours ago that it's ordering Israel to halt its military operations in Rafah, basically saying that Israel has to stop fighting, and voted by 13-2 for that to happen. And pretty much this trend here of the UN, the whole world, the West turning against Israel, that's basically what we're talking about in the main story today as well.
Those are international headlines. This is international politics and diplomacy and so forth. But aside from the helicopter crash, it's a moral story, isn't it? It's moral rot when Ireland, Spain, and Norway, and as you said, I think it's potentially Slovenia, Malta, and Belgium. Like, now is the opportunity. Now is the time, as footage is still coming out of members of Hamas talking about how they raped and murdered their way through Gaza, father and son, Hamas terrorists admitting to their interrogators what they did there. Now's the time, if I'm the leader of Ireland or one of these countries, that I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. I'm going to associate myself with the Palestinians. I'm going to save Hamas, if I can do it, from complete destruction. That doesn't come from, well, you see, it's all about impersonal trends and forces and economics. No, it's moral rot. We don't have leadership. Those nations certainly don't have leadership. Or families or voters who say, I know what's right and wrong, not from my own ideas, but as Mr. Palmer just said, from the law that's in the Bible, this book that's unlike any other. And I know that's wrong. We are not doing that. Whatever the economics, whatever the, international relations, whoever, is paying whoever or whatever, all these, powerful forces that are going on behind the scenes, nobody's standing up. It's a problem with society as much as it is with international diplomacy. So give us more about that main story that you said broke just today.
Yeah, and that's what's funny about all of this is that the more evidence that comes out showing how right Israel is, the more everybody doubles down. And I mean, just this week, a prosecutor for the International Criminal Court requested an arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And here's what he accused him of. Quote, a Netanyahu is causing extermination, causing starvation as a method of war, including the denial of humanitarian relief supplies, deliberately targeting civilians in conflict, and much more. End quote. Like, when Hamas went into Israel, they took about 250 people hostage. There's over 120 still held hostage today by Hamas. I think I saw it said 37 of those are just dead bodies. They're just dead Israelis that are being held by Hamas right now. And there's something John Spencer said. He's from West Point. He said this in March. He said, I've never known an army to take such measures as Israel's army has to attend to the enemy's civilian population, especially while simultaneously combating the enemy in the very same buildings. In fact, by my analysis, Israel has implemented more precautions to prevent civilian harm than any military in history, above and beyond what international law requires, and more than the United States did in its wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those are incredible statements that nobody else has ever done more. And this is the evidence that we're talking about. So John Spencer says this in March, and then this prosecutor from the ICC comes out and says, no, actually, we need to arrest this man because he's causing extermination. Like, this is unprecedented. This is something we've never seen. And this is partly a fruit of the English-speaking world turning its back on Israel. You know, all of Israel's enemies, all of the people barely need an excuse to attack Israel. They're pouncing. They see how the West is turning its back on Israel, criticizing it. And, you know, they think that, okay, we're going to go after him. Now, if this arrest warrant is approved, it's going to leave, you know, Netanyahu in the same bracket as a maniac leader like Vladimir Putin. You know, where if he shows up in any other country, he's getting arrested. And the only other country that seems to be behind Israel at this point is Germany. Like, Israel is finding itself increasingly isolated. And they're doing it in a very intelligent way. Like, this prosecutor for the ICC, he came out and he said, okay, we need this arrest warrant for Israel, but then we also are going to give these arrest warrants for some Hamas leaders as well. You know, like, we're going after everybody, so you can't accuse us of duplicity. And most of the countries in the world have gone along and said, oh, we respect the ICC, we respect them as an independent body. But here's what Germany came out and said. It says that the simultaneous application for arrest warrants against the Hamas leaders on the one hand and Israeli officials on the other have created the false impression of equivalence. And then Germany just goes out and talks about how Hamas is responsible, like you said, for this barbaric massacre and deliberately raped, murdered, abducted so many people. And it points out correctly, I might add, that Israel's government has the right and the duty to protect and defend its population. And so that's one very important takeaway from all of this, is Israel is being increasingly isolated from the world. And the more that it does so, and the more that Germany comes out and says things like this, the more reason that Israel has to look to Germany.
And there's a reason why we are looking for that in particular. I mean, there's so many significant things happening in this situation. And I know, we know there are other situations and other horrific injustices and other terrible body counts happening all over the world. I mean, October 7th is unique in a lot of ways. It's like after September 11th, we're in a different world now. We're in a world that not only has experienced this, but now is accepting what they call the October 7th attacks, which is itself a terrible word. The word you used is much better, a massacre, a deliberate targeting of civilians, if you will, to the International Criminal Court, if they're so worried about that type of thing. And as you said, the Israelis are not deliberately targeting civilians in conflict. And you quoted that expert on that. But we're looking at this in detail, and we're looking at a detail of a detail, Germany's involvement. Why does Germany's involvement catch your eye?
Right. So when the October 7th terrorism happened, Mr. Gerald Flurry, our editor-in-chief, he focused on what Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz said. He said that Germany's word in the Middle East is important because Israel knows that Germany stands by it. But our country also has good connections to the neighboring Arab countries. After Germany, and then Mr. Flurry says that after Germany and other Western nations showed solidarity with Israel, Iran tried to punish them by using its proxies to attack merchant ships in the Red Sea. And that Germany sees that this conflict could explode at any time and that it's actively preparing for war. Now, these are really bold statements. I mean, you could take anything from any world leader, you know, regarding this entire situation and make it significant. But right. What Germany is saying is significant, just as Mr. Fleury identifies there, because of a prophecy in the Bible that's in Psalm 83. And here's what Mr. Fleury says. He says, Psalm 83 describes an alliance of nations filled with unspeakable hatred. And though the world doesn't realize that these nations are on the scene today and they're bracing for war. And that's the amazing thing about the Bible is, like you were saying earlier and going through with Mr. Palmer, there's so much going on in the world. There's so many really important stories. But the Bible points us in the right direction to see what we have to focus on. And then these are things that a lot of people don't see. Mr. Fleury goes on to say that as Germany is preparing, like it's saying in this anti-Iran alliance, this prophecy in Psalm 83 gives us penetrating insight into the true intent of this anti-Iran alliance. And then Mr. Fleury then says, this alliance, which is spoken about in Psalm 83, it poses a hidden danger that no analysts recognize, because its primary goal actually isn't to confront Iran. And it's all wrapped up in this, what we see, this German posturing towards helping Israel, towards assisting it, being the lone help, the lone country that Israel is looking to for support. And historically, if you know anything about your history, Germany, Europe as a whole, has always had this obsession with Jerusalem, with Israel. That's where they've always looked to. And this is what the prophecy in Psalm 83 is all about. There's just so much packed in it that the rest of the world's analysts and experts, they don't see, and they can't see it because they don't look to the Bible. Now, I know that's a lot of information. There's so much going on there, but Mr. Fleury has an awesome article. It's in the latest Trumpet that we have right now. It's titled, The Hidden Danger in Germany's Alliance Against Iran. It's such an awesome article, and it does go through this Psalm 83 alliance, and it helps you contextualize how important it is that Israel is being isolated by almost every country in the world, and that Germany is the main one that's sticking up for Israel. That article by Mr. Fleury will just illuminate so much of what the Bible is prophesying is about to happen very soon.
That's the hidden danger in Germany's alliance against Iran. Most people don't notice Germany's statements of help for Israel. Like you said, they don't see a statement by the German chancellor as any more significant necessarily than a statement by an American president, certainly, or other world leaders in Europe or elsewhere. Most people don't realize that Germany is building an alliance against Iran. Most people don't think Israel will rely on Germany, certainly not more than America. And nobody sees that Germany will use that reliance to betray Israel. And well, as you said there, there's a lot of claims that I just made. There's a lot of claims that you just made in that segment. So don't just accept them because we've said them. Of course, look at the hidden danger in Germany's alliance against Iran. Look at world events. Look at the news. Get in that habit and see, is an alliance building? And why is that a danger to Israel specifically? The hidden danger in Germany's alliance against Iran. You are listening to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG. We've covered Europe. We've covered the Middle East. We'll cover Anglo-America as well as Asia here in a moment. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
Hello and welcome back to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG. This is the Week in Review edition of the show. We have covered Europe with Richard Palmer. We have covered the Middle East with Rufaro Munyepa. Now we're going to move to the nations of Anglo-America, these related, mostly English-speaking nations that form a bloc of their own. Andrew Miller, can you give us a rundown of the top stories you've noticed in Anglo-America?
Yeah, we're entering the hurricane season here in Anglo-America. And while there haven't been any big hurricanes yet, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced the ocean temps look like this may be one of the worst hurricane seasons on record. Also this week, the Biden administration announced that it will be tapping into an emergency gasoline stockpile to bring down gas prices before the presidential election. And the potential sale of an American ammunitions maker to a Czech arms company is drawing scrutiny from many lawmakers, highlighting concerns about foreign ownership in the ammunition industry in the midst of a severe global arms shortage sparked by continuing wars in Ukraine and the Middle East.
Go ahead and hit us with your main story, which involves not only the superpower, the declining superpower of the United States, but also Asia.
Yeah, the U.S. dollar is slowly losing its reserve currency status. And that's one of the primary reasons that's happening is because communist China is setting up an alternative financial system. There was a pretty big development with that this week where the U.S. Treasury Department announced that China had actually sold record amounts of U.S. Treasury bonds last quarter. In particular, China sold $53.3 billion in U.S. bonds, more than they ever have before. And it wasn't a one-off thing either. It's actually a continuing trend. There was actually a point where China owned $1 trillion of U.S. debt. They've taken that down to about $800 billion. So still a lot of money, but which means they've offloaded a fifth of the dollars they used to hold, which is big news because it does show that like China, it's trying to decouple itself from America. For a long time, economic analysts, they'd even refer to Chimerica. It's, if you know the story but from Greek mythology about the Chimera, you know, it's all, like, all these different animals put together. It's like a clever pun to show that like you've got like this two-headed monster with China and America, where you make the goods in China and you sell them in America, but it's really one economy. And that's the main reason what China's doing this is that they're trying to set up their own alternative financial system with the other BRICS nations, Russia, Brazil, India, South Africa. And to do that, they actually have to decouple from the dollar. Actually, right now, they're trying to artificially lower their currency so that stuff will be cheap in China. That's why you buy stuff cheap in China because their currency is weak. Right now, they actually say that in the eyes of the Chinese government, the dollar is too strong. It's 20% weaker than it used to be before COVID, but they still think it's too strong. So they're trying to like decouple their economy so they can make the dollar weaker. Which, in one way, this isn't one of those news stories that like this is unabashedly bad news, although it does point to some bad news when you interpret it in the light of Bible prophecy. Because, for one, the fact that the Chinese think the dollar is too strong is good for the dollar. It's our currency is more stable than China's is. And for two, a lot of conservatives have had problems, or at least the rare fiscal conservatives, pointed out that we probably shouldn't be so dependent on a communist dictatorship like China. If China came in tomorrow and sold all $800 billion of its debt, it could just wreck our economy. So it kind of gives them like a financial nuclear weapon against us. So like the fact that we're kind of weaning ourselves off Chinese debt. They used to have $1 trillion. Now we have $800 billion. It would really be nice if we could get it down to zero, where China has no leverage over us. But like I said, with that, you've got Bible prophecies, and Isaiah 23 primarily talks about Tyre and Kittim and Tarshish. But like all the ancient shipping powers and the modern shipping powers are like Japan and the European Union and China that come against America. So you're talking about like China's building this economic alliance that's prophesied to come against America. And for that happen, it's like if a chimera, if you've seen a picture of a chimera or what the Greeks thought a chimera looked like, a chimera can't fight itself. A two-headed monster, the one head can't bite the other head. You've got to have some degree of separation. For if China is going to make an economic trade siege against America, China needs to have a separate economic system to the dollar. And that's really what you're seeing. It's been happening for about 10 years now and took a big $53.3 billion leap this last quarter. where China's dumping U.S. debt, trying to separate it. So eventually, you'll have this Chinese economic bloc, and they're trading a lot with Botswana and Zimbabwe and nations in Africa and nations in Asia and nations in Latin America. So they're trying to get economies around the world into the Chinese economic system, but trying to get a degree of separation between them and America. They still want to sell stuff to America, but they don't want their currencies linked. And that would be a big step for China to have the ability to lead like a trade siege against America down the road, like the Bible prophesies.
So this could go in any direction, couldn't it? We've been watching Chinese holdings of American debt for quite a while. We've known it's a nuclear, you know, financial nuclear weapon, so to speak. And we've been worried about the Chinese dumping it, especially all at once. You said that it's been fairly gradual, at least this, you know, iteration of dumping dollars. And because of the fact that with the one head doesn't want to bite the other head too hard, so to speak. But the end result that you're looking for remains the same, even though they haven't just dumped a trillion all at once, like many have feared they would. They are divesting themselves of it. They are getting rid of it. And they still have $800 billion that they could dump all at once and throw our economy into disaster and hurt their own as well. But it seems like they're intentionally decoupling, as you said, now that they seem to have the upper hand. They're the stronger head, if you want to call it that, in this relationship, and be able to freeze out the United States. Like I said, this could go in any direction, but you're looking for it to specifically, definitely, whether they dump it fast, whether they dump it slow, whether they don't dump it at all and they do something else. You're looking for a specific outcome. Tell us again what that specific outcome is and why.
Yeah, like I said, this is where, like we were talking about earlier in the show, being able to interpret news events in the light of Bible prophecy is so useful. Because like I said, this is actually one of those topics that could be really good for the United States. Like if we wean ourselves off Chinese debt, now we're not dependent on a communist dictatorship. It would be even better if we start balancing our budget, because that's probably like, say, right now we don't collect enough in tax money to pay for our spending bills. We run $1 trillion deficits, and that $1 trillion deficits, they're financed by selling treasury bonds. And so if you don't sell to China, you either have to balance the budget, or what they're going to do, sell to somebody else. So we're kind of going cap in hand to Japan this week, trying to sell more treasury bonds to them, which continues splitting the world into two camps. You've got Team China and Team America, and we're trying to get Japan on Team America as it separates. But that could be, like, just looking at this from a conservative standpoint, it's like, oh yeah, if we're going to sell debt, it's like we might as well sell it to democracies like Japan and Europe and keep them on one team that can stand against the communist dictatorship team that China's leading. So that could be a positive development. Now, Bible prophecy gives us the advantages that it predicted thousands of years ago that there would be these two teams, but then tells us that this Chinese-led trade bloc, like the economic siege, works, and it actually weakens America to enough that a European superpower is able to invade and conquer the people. So Bible prophecy tells us that, like, America's not going to come out stronger from this. The world's going to split into two economic blocks, and then the anti-American one's going to win, which lets us know this is bad news. But a really good example of just being able to use the Bible to see, like, okay, it's like, well, this is the direction that's going in, and this is how it's actually going to show up at the end. So in the show notes, we'll put in the article, Why the Trumpet Watches America's Economic Collapse, which will have a lot more of the biblical background about what the Bible says about America's economic rise and economic fall. I think it highlights one particularly verse that carries a lot of resonance in this case is Deuteronomy 28, verses 43 through 44, which talks about one of the curses God sends on end-time America for turning away from him is that strangers will lend to you and you won't lend to them. So this is actually a case where, we're borrowing money from strangers in China. And now the strangers in China, as they're turning against us, they don't want to take our money. So we're looking for more strangers to keep borrowing money with. But that would be God's solution to this would be to actually balance your budget and don't borrow from China or Japan and or anyone else. That way, you don't have this problem of like, oh, they can hurt us if they don't lend us money because you just don't borrow money.
Interesting to see certainly biblical prophecies, but even the biblical principles in action here, because biblical principles are a core part, an integral part of Bible prophecies. The borrower being servant to the lender comes to mind, a literal proverb. It's literally proverbial that the borrower is servant to the lender, whether you're a head of household or whether you are the richest nation in the history of nations. And the lesson here being, if you trust in that debt, if you trust in that economy, if you trust in the military that that economy is able to build and not in God, there are consequences for that. So that was a trends article at thetrumpet.com. Why the Trumpet Watches America's Economic Collapse. Andrew Miller did a lot of work on that. And it's one of the longer trends articles. So have a look at that at thetrumpet.com/trends. And with that, we'll close out this week's program. Email us your thoughts, letters@thetrumpet.com. And we thank our scattered crew today on different continents for contributing to the show, for producing it. Isaac Lorenz on the road is about to get this file and get it posted for us. So we thank him for all of his efforts in the midst of all his other responsibilities on tour there. So thank you, Isaac. And thank you most of all for listening to Trumpet Hour. We'll be back with you next week.